it's in those moments that we screw up or we do things that, not to force fake an error, but those moments are actually the imperfect moments that create the connection. If we own it, we actually can pull each other closer.
Plug into the minds of the world's cutting-edge innovators, visionaries, and thought leaders who are rewriting the rules of sales and success. It's your time to make an impact. I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the Selling with Love podcast. It's your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and I have an incredible guest with me today who is an ally in the mission of rebranding sales in a way that we need to, so that the people that have great products, great services, visionary companies that are trying to solve problems in the world can embrace sales as its beautiful art that it is and remove some of the negative biases we have around sales. Brian Kramer is joining me. He is known as a Zen master to digital marketers. He's the CEO of H2H Companies. He does executive coaching. He's a co-founder of Pure Matter, a Silicon Valley marketing agency founded back in 2001. We'll get into the history of that company as well, but he has actually created one of the fastest growing companies in the process. He's written several books, including There Is No B2B or B2C, Business to Business or Business to Consumer, Only Human to Human. And that's why I say he's an ally, bringing a message of seeing how to bring back humanity into selling, especially in an age where things are moving more towards AI. What is going to be the piece of humanity that we need to keep, nurture, and succeed? So I'm excited to go deeper into that, as well as his other book, Shareology, How Sharing is Powering the Human Economy, an amazing book selling over 40,000 copies, translated in over 6 languages as well. Hosts this podcast as well, and he's here on ours. Brian, welcome. It's a pleasure to have you.
That is a wonderful introduction. Thank you so much, and it's wonderful to be here too.
I call you an ally. There's like a lot of different people I bring onto the podcast, but there's a few people I really enjoy my conversations with, which are authors of books that are trying to bring a different light to the perspective of sales. And I'd just be curious on how, when you brought that forward around like human to human into the sales organization, is it traditionally well received? Do you feel like people are resisting when you start introducing things like human to human as, oh, and it's not focused on the bottom line or something?
It's always been this pushback of how do we automate? How do we make things faster? How do we make it more efficient? How do we get this done faster? What it's affecting the bottom line. It's numbers and percentages. And every company that I come into contact, including my own, is guilty of all those things. And so it's not just technology. It's also how we are being and how we think, how we deal in business. And especially now, you know, I wrote the book many years ago, but you look at how it is now today with AI and virtual reality and augmented reality, like, and especially what's coming in the next few years. So I believe it stayed relevant because of all those things. But, you know, it goes back to the days of door-to-door salespeople and, you know, them selling things and the communication, the relationships and the family and community and all those things that we once, I mean, heck, we had direct mail when, remember direct mail when we used to look forward to and then not look forward to all that direct mail that we got. So, you know, everything has just completely shifted. But at the end of the day, what matters most is the relationship. And so, you know, it's kind of a callback to what's desired most, and that's connection. So that's really where I see the value in human to human. And really, we build on relationships. We don't build on product or we don't build on service. It's, do we like the person? Yes. Okay, now we can move forward.
There's this kind of return to basics that seems to be a trend in the industry, which are like, hey, we may have missed the mark on the fundamentals. And I think this humanity and this aspect of connection you've already highlighted speaks to that. And I'd be curious to know now these basics you see being very effective, maybe forgotten through the pace of the life today. What are those things? And are there things we should be focusing much more on today?
That's a great question. So basics are the things that we hear a lot about, the buzzwords that we kind of pass over. So I'll bring up the three that I write about in HH that are the three most important things that we need, both as a business and as humans, as people. So it's simplicity, empathy, and imperfection. When you look at simplicity, you think about the brand that really talks to you, it really speaks to you, it sings to you. It's just like, wow, that is beautifully done and simple, yet inside the company, they're complex. It's not easy to deliver simplicity. We hear about it all the time. We think about what is simple. How do I have a simple day? What is the next simple action that I need to take? But at the end of the day, it's much harder than that because we all speak in acronyms and complexities within our organizations that makes it so hard for us to deliver on simplicity to a customer or in any engagement in any conversation. So simplicity is super important. You're probably thinking through your head, who is simplicity? Number one answer I normally get is Apple. They're kind of a slam dunk. Whether you like Apple or not, you can go onto their website and pretty much buy what you think you need and not have to think about it too much. Or you can get customer service pretty easily. They've managed to design for simplicity. That was Steve Jobs' whole thing. The next one was empathy. Empathy is, you know, just a trait that I find that's going away constantly. And we're going to need it more and more when you think about the next few years. I know I keep bringing that up, but it is going to be more needed over the next few years with AI being so prevalent and it having a synthesized, what I would say, like faking empathy. And so we have to get back to our roots to understand what real empathy actually is and how do we want to have that with each other? What does that look like? You might look at a company, and I know this is like off the beaten path that you might not think about, but I'll choose Amazon for empathy, which is strange. Yes, they have a lot of issues. Yes, maybe there's some political things there. That's not the road I'm heading down with this comment. The one thing that I would say is that you can return just about every product pretty simply, pretty easily. And that's empathy. That's a form of empathy. So see how I didn't use an example of an emotion that we have between two people. I used it as a service offering that you use their product in the way that we return our products, I should say, back to the company so that people can feel empathy. They feel like this company cares about me, that this thing didn't fit. And there's no restocking fee for getting my product back because it didn't fit. It didn't work. They know that that's a huge value to the customer. And then we want to return to Amazon and do that where local stores may not be able to do that. So anyway, that's empathy. And then the last one's imperfection. If you think about companies that have imperfection, they're very few and far between. They don't exist quite often. And it's because they're trying to be perfect. They're trying to, I mean, just go look at your Instagram feed. Everything's a mockery of perfection. And so when we can get into imperfection, it doesn't mean that we're going to be, as my wife has called me since the day we met, Gaylord Focker after Meet the Parents. It's embracing your inner Fockerness and creating, that's F-O-C-K-E-R for those that are trying to figure out what I'm saying. You know, he embraced his inner imperfection. We laughed with him. We laughed at him, but also with him, because those kinds of things are the things that actually happen to us. When it happens to a company, we don't own it as well. We try to either cover it up or we try to move past it, or, you know, we don't laugh at ourselves with the audience. And so that's what they're looking for. They're looking for owning it. You can look at Dove maybe as a company that celebrates imperfection, the imperfection of skin, you know, the way that they use their commercials and brand and messaging. And they didn't really have to honor something that happened to the company. They just honored humanity in the way that they approached it with messaging. On the flip side, we could look at all three of those and say, what company does not have all three and yet still succeeds? We just don't connect in with the company. And that might be Facebook. Facebook does not have simplicity. They do not celebrate imperfection, and they do not have much empathy for the customer. It's really hard. I don't think I'm the only one here who can't call Facebook and say, I have a problem. So those are the three things, and yet they survive despite themselves. But are we rooting for them as a company? No, at least I'm not. Are we wanting them to succeed? Could it be their eventual downfall? In these three areas, when what goes up must come down, this could be the three areas that come down. And when we look at companies that do have these three things, it's the things that we root for. And we will buy their product and become raving fans because of those things. I could keep going on, as you know, but I'll stop there.
Well, I'm going to expose maybe, I don't think it's imperfection, but it's definitely one of my hobbies that definitely doesn't have the flavor of being fancy, but I love video games. And I'm seeing this trend in the video game industry. You got these AAA studios, big, big studios that are impersonal, no empathy. They're trying to make the games be perfect and appease to everyone. And they have to have like inclusions of all sorts of things that completely miss the point of what the game is all about. And it gets super complicated. They make you buy this accessory, that accessory. And people are so fed up that the moment there's something that comes out that is fresh from a small team that's trying to do their best, like people have zero loyalty to that organization because they've extracted everything from just its functionality. So now there's no moat, there's no protection against a competitor that just comes and says, we're going to offer something 1% better. People will be like, goodbye. And so what you're speaking about for Facebook, exactly, like I know everybody's trying to get as many users on tech platforms, but the stickiness on Facebook, people will be ready to ditch as soon as something's better. And I think this becomes the ultimate competitive advantage. If you have those places, then if something will need to be like 50% better before people be like, okay, we're going to leave now. It seems to be the trend.
The thing I want to zero in on and definitely hover over that you just said is the competitive advantage. I always like to say, and this is like, it's almost like you and I are brothers from another mother here, because I really believe that being human is actually our competitive advantage. And if we can show up and do things that shows that connection, like for instance, you know, when was the last time that you actually got a thank you note in the mail from a large company? I know it's an overused traditional thing, but now remember I said direct mail is dead. We at least companies aren't using it very often, which could be an opportunity. But at the same time, take the thank you card and turn it on its side. Like, how can you use a thank you card? Maybe in the digital world, but personalize it. You know, create these little interactions, these little human moments of truth that connect with people at a deeper level and shows that you took a little second or two to create something personal for someone that on the other end and did something that really showed up. That's missing from today's world. Everything, when you look back, even just 5 years ago, really wasn't that long ago that we used to reach out and, you know, send somebody a prompt just saying, hey, thinking about you, thanks for buying that thing yesterday. When next time you come into our store, or next time you come to our business, or it's my turn, it's my treat for lunch. Like those kinds of interactions, those little short little bursts and moments of humanness is what gets us back into being a raving loyal fan to a business. And it's not a constant barrage of emails and a constant barrage of demand gen of any kind that gets you back in. So, you know, I always say, like, go to the whiteboard out your entire marketing and sales strategy as it is, and then take a step back and look at the whiteboard and say, where are we missing human moments of truth? Like, where are the human moments missing from what we currently have? And just put one or two in there and you'll see like everything change. Like, because those little moments are going to pop off the board and you're going to have all these little engagement centers. And the engagement centers are what are real. Those are the things that are going to get you more up in the morning. It's going to get them to buy your product more. It's going to get you more of those raving fans.
I like this tool to search for these moments of humanity that you can actually plan for and market and prioritize, because that will move the lever. Especially we're like, attention is so scarce right now, and that seems like a way to stand out more than ever. Now, Brian, I'm a techie guy, and I sometimes get lost in the sauce. And what I mean by that is I get excited by tools that sometimes give me the illusion that I can scale my empathy really fast with very little effort or thinking. I'll give you an example. My God, this might be, I'm going to say 15 years ago, 10 years ago, between 10 to 15 years ago, I remember somebody recruited me in a direct sales organization or a multi-level marketing. It was send out cards. And it was a way for me where I actually got my handwriting digitized so that I could write handwritten notes automatically as direct mail. See, going back to the direct mail thing. But in doing so, I feel like it lost its empathy value in some capacity, because I wouldn't put the energy and empathy, like actual my energy caring, because it could be fully automated. And I feel like there is a space for automation. Something gets lost a little. And is it binary? Is there a right balance to seek here so that stays human?
Yeah, I'm guilty of the same thing. And you and I are seemingly very close in being testers of all things. I think we could probably spend a lot of time on just that, because I want to always test and see what is human and how is that going to impact the other person. I've tried that as well, and it had the same impact on me too. And you do have to try it and see, is that something, like, how would people receive that is it something where you cared enough to fill this thing out that created this thing that showed some level of personalization and humanity, and how did that impact them? And then you see that it didn't, and you're like, well, that's interesting. I mean, it's handwritten. Okay, well, it's handwritten by a machine. So what is the difference here? The difference is that we can tell. We can tell when somebody did something versus when they didn't do something. We may have gone to the computer and punched in a few keys and it created this thing. But at the end of the day, it's really that level of humanity that only you and I can describe when we receive something that makes us feel inside. And if we don't get that, if we don't feel that, then that's the difference right there. Like, for instance, there's this company that I wish stuck around. They went out of business and I really don't know why, but they've sprung up in another form. Some of the people that work there actually are bringing it back up again. I hope it works, because it really was one of my favorite companies. And that their company name was Punk Post. I think it's coming up under another name. And if you want to search Punk Post, you'll probably find the other company that's coming up. And what they would do is they had artists all around the world that were graphic artists, but they were text, like font artists. And so they would draw with colors and markers and pencils and all this stuff, but with your message. And so when they received it, your card that received in the mail was actual artwork. So it would say like, hey, dear Jason, or hey, Jason, thank you so much for having me on your podcast. I'm so glad that we like to test different tools and tricks and things. You know, so it has that little, like, you can write whatever you wanted to it. But the way that the design came out was like epically beautiful, as an artist would represent those words. And you could choose like informal, formal, you know, funny, punchy, like what kind of design do you want? And people would get these things from me and they would post them online and go, who does that? And so, you know, yeah, it was $1 or $1.50, which is kind of, or actually, sorry, it was maybe probably double than that. But even more so, like the value of just that thing that you're delivering to somebody was above and beyond me sitting down and writing a note, and still good enough. Sometimes it would get people to share it online and you go, wow, that really did make an impact. So those are the kinds of things that, you know, make a difference. It could be as simple as sitting down and making a personalized video and picking your video, your camera up and just saying something, then sending it. Most of the time, that's how I reply to everybody on my newsletter and send it out to people on Saturdays. I'll just walk around. I'll create these little 10, 15 second videos and send it back as the reply. Not because I have all this time in the world that I want to do that, but can you imagine receiving something because you took the time to reply to my newsletter? I want to show you gratitude, but also at the same time, I want to create a connection and a relationship. And you're going to do that best when it's seeing me and feeling me and hearing me. So I've generated more human to human interactions and connection that way versus just a reply that says, yeah, I totally agree. Thank you. So there's ways to do this. You just have to think, like, how would I like to receive it? How would I like to be communicated? And that's what's going to make the difference.
Every business today is an online business, and you're going to need a website. If you are using WordPress, you're going to need to host it on a powerful website host that is lightning fast, works all the time, and can give you human-to-human support in the process. That's why today's sponsor is Kinsta, and we're going to encourage you to check out their incredible offer for those of you who need a reliable host for your website. Ready to experience Kinsta's hosting for yourself? Get your first month free when you sign up at Kinsta.com today, and it's the perfect opportunity to see why Kinsta is trusted by thousands of businesses worldwide to power their websites. Visit Kinsta.com to get this limited time offer for new customers on select plans. Don't miss out and get started free today. Brian, I've noticed a kind of similar decrease in effect and lack of humanity when you, even beyond just writing the cards and doing something impersonal, using AI tools to say, write your copy, build your websites, send out email replies, and it's all generated with AI. There's almost like a lack of soul that feels easy to detect for another human. And that is equally very weird, but also very obvious. And I feel very strange about this phenomenon. When I use a lot of AI, I feel like there's a bigger disconnect and the humanity's not there.
Oh, I'd love to ask a question first, and then I'm going to dive into that, if you don't mind.
Sure.
When you receive that piece of information, whatever form that's in, probably in writing, I would imagine, based upon what you just said, most of the time, what emotion does that bring up for you? What's the, if you had to put it, label it as an emotion, what is it?
Disconnect, maybe?
Yeah.
Like, I think that would be the strongest one.
So it makes you take a step back, not a step forward.
Yeah. It's almost like a, is it disappointment? Is it like, like maybe it's like, oh, okay, shortcut was used. All right.
Yeah. So it's maybe a little bit of it being inauthentic. It might all equate to a little bit of distrust, because if they're going to use technology in this way, then how are they going to deliver whatever it is that I might buy from them? Right. And so they've already set the tone that there might be a level of already a step backward, a step of distrust there. And that's what their unintentional impact is. Our intention is to play the numbers game. Our unintention is that we're making people take a step back. That's kind of, you know, what every lazy marketer does. And sorry, I'm calling out all my fellow marketers, but I love you guys. I really do. But at the same time, it is a lazy thing to do. I mean, you think about using AI to do ads, or AI to do targeting, or AI to do sales automated emails, or AI to do writing, like you just said. I have no problem with it. Let me be honest. Like, I think AI is great. I love AI. I use it like 50 times a day. I love AI for when I hit a wall and I don't know what to write next, for like brainstorming buddy. But that's what AI is. Use AI as a buddy, not as a replacement. If you use it as a replacement, then the chances of it being yet, and I say yet because I think it will get there, but using it yet as a place to replace what you're doing, or replace completely what you're saying, whether it's written or even synthetic and video and verbal, I think that eventually it's going to create a step backward. And then what will happen is, being human will be all of our competitive advantages. What I mean by that is, if everything's synthetic, if everything's AI and one person speaking human, guess who's going to stand out? Like the person speaking human. So if we're standing up and saying something that's Gaylord Fokker-ish and everyone else is saying all perfect things, I'm going to love the Gaylord Fokker guy, or his wife. Gosh, her name is escaping me right now. Martha.
I was going to say she was too perfect, not as memorable.
Not as memorable. There you go. So, you know, that's the point. The point is that we don't want perfection. We don't want us to come across that way. We actually need to celebrate and look inside and say, what is the me that people need to hear and see? And that's what they really want. Like when I write on my Substack, I'm really cautious about digging deep and moving into the true emotion that I'm trying to express, and being really sincere and really honest, almost writing it as if it's like a, I don't want to say my diary, but as people are seeing into like what I'm facing, what I'm really going through. And then how can we all learn from this thing? Now, it might be about what we're talking about, but it's what I'm going through. And no AI can plug into and feel and see and write through those words and have you at the other end go, wow, I really identify with that. I really like that. That hit me. That caused a tear in my eye. That made me laugh out loud. Those emotions, those seven core emotions that we all have that matter so much, it's not touching on any of those core emotions. It's just giving us a sense of stepping backward and disconnection, like you said. So, you know, you have to be really careful. And those are just the lines that we have to make as a company. I think we have to draw the line and say, this is where we're willing to play and this is where we're not willing to play.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm not claiming myself to be innocent either. I love using AI a lot. And I've also tested sending out a lot of stuff AI when I was too busy to go it. And the data would show the responsiveness of it. Like whatever you're saying right now, like I've seen it and I'm like, oh yeah, the return on that is pretty much at the same level of what I invested in that, which was not as much. And so the times, like you said, that I've put in a bit more emotion in anything I write, I see the responsiveness of it is completely different. Matter of fact, I always get, I always find it cheeky when I find a typo in an email. I'm like, ooh, that's probably a real human right now. And that's not something you would see before.
I sent out an email one time that had a broken link in it. It said, hello, name, didn't have the right brackets. I didn't replace it with the personalized characters, HTML characters, to pull in the actual name. I left the characters off. And so all it said was hello, name, to like 30,000 people. And it went out the next morning. Oh, and I half expected that to be brutal. But I followed it up with an email like, you know, when I caught it like an hour later and said, hello, name again, dot, 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 just kidding. I know your name is Jason. And that made fun of myself for what I just did. And I can't believe I just did that. I'm really sorry. Human things happen, obviously, and made fun of myself and then went on to say the actual thing again. I can't tell you how many replies I got from that one thing that I've never gotten before. Like all of a sudden, it's like I woke up people to like the fact that, oh, Brian's real. Like he really is like behind the screen. He's actually, and I realized like right then and there, it's in those moments that we screw up or we do things that, not to force fake an error, but those moments are actually the imperfect moments that create the connection. If we own it, we actually can pull each other closer.
I want to wrap this up into maybe some advice for people that are right at the beginning of their journey. I notice the standard they seem to hold themselves against for their way of operating business is looking at things like Instagram as inspiration, where, oh, I need to have everything perfect before I make an offer to somebody. I have to have everything perfect, like the website, the branding, gotta have the colors. I need to do a photo shoot. There's so many things that people feel they need to do to get the company to a point that it's so perfect before they even speak to their first potential client. I've witnessed that a lot. And I feel like what you're sharing right now is like, you're sharing what works at a scale for larger companies. And it's the same advice for the really small businesses, but shown in a way that it works at every size. And so I'd love for you to elaborate more on that for those who are feeling the pain of wanting to be completely perfect before they even make their first product. The product needs to be perfect, everything. And it's almost so much pressure that you're completely paralyzed to even get yourself started. Would you have some advice and some takeaways for people?
Yeah. So that's an interesting thing that I coach a lot of executives and companies, and I see that happen all the time. Like, you know, people scrapping things that they've been working on and not putting it out in front of people or not thinking their product's ready or delaying the product launch. Sometimes it's worth it. Sometimes it makes perfect sense and they're not ready, which begs the question of like, what would have made them ready? And that's really the question I think that you're asking, like, what makes somebody ready? Most of the time it's fear. Fear is the thing holding people back from putting something out there and doing it in a build the plane as they fly it kind of way. Like if you look at every major company that's out there, they built the plane as they flew it from day one. They stopped building the plane as they flew it. Like once it garnered enough attention and fiscal responsibility, then all of a sudden they had a group of people that were responsible and we started to lose this ability to be flexible and be more human. So it's the early stage companies, those small businesses as well that can be flexible. That's actually a huge leg up on every large company that's out there, is releasing something whenever you need to, where a large company can't do that. We can listen to the customer much faster and operate faster. It's just an overwhelming, is this the right move or is that the right move? And maybe that's where you need to get somebody like an advisor or a coach or somebody in there to actually help you see your blind spots, because fear is holding you back from just doing it and saying, did that work? We learned from it. Let's move in a different direction. And the other thing I think is that, you know, I don't think marketing is the right approach for every company from when they're trying to release something and build something. You actually don't need that many people to validate your idea. You can go out with one, two, or three different potential clients, offer something up and say, we're going to beta test this just with you three and learn from that. And then extend it to six and then extend it to 10. Don't try to go out and make a revenue from day one. Try to actually learn what is it that will happen if I just launch this company today, you know, or launch this product today. And just what would the impact be if I just learned from this? And then we can move into making money mode 6 months from now or 12 months from now. It's going to speed up your product development faster into the right direction just by learning from what people want faster than trying to get it perfect, releasing it, and then staring at the screen and clicking refresh and waiting for the numbers to go up.
I love that you're keeping the humanity throughout the entire process, which I think is the key and the piece that most people need to focus on. Brian, I've noticed you mentioned throughout the conversation a lot about the upcoming times, the changing times, and how everything is moving really fast. So I'd be curious to know from your perspective, what are some of the things you're most excited about that might be coming in the next 3 to 5 years?
Let's see, what am I most excited about? I'm excited about augmented reality. I know a lot of people aren't. Some people are. A lot of people are. I'm excited about it because I love honoring people. And I think when I see someone and it tells me like, hey, so-and-so's birthday is tomorrow, and I can then go honor that person then face-to-face and say, hey, Jason, your birthday is tomorrow. I'll be honest, my glasses told me that, but I just wanted to wish you a happy birthday. And just that moment that like sparked that, that's the good stuff. So if you can use technology to create a conversation, I think that's where it's going to be exciting. If you can use AI to create a conversation, or if you could use, you know, anything that's coming that we don't even know, we're moving so fast, we don't even know what's coming. Like there's so many cool things I think ahead. And there's so many things that are coming that I know marketers and salespeople will use for the dark side. And we're going to see right through it. And it's going to jeopardize their original intent. So the things that I'm excited about are the things that help us engage faster with each other on a more human level. Like, for example, things that remind me that Jason's birthday is tomorrow. I know it's really simple and it's really like, oh yeah, duh. But I do want to engage more. It's just, there's only one of me. So how can I do that more, faster, and with quality and in the most human way possible? If I can leverage technology to do that, I'm going to win.
Hell yeah. I mean, that to me, this is where I see the fun in the technology, such as like the evolution of CRMs that just don't take away the humanity, but make you so much more effective at being human at scale. And I think that is the trend. I'm also, so yeah, same, cut from the same cloth. I'm very excited about that as well. And I can see the positive trends that'll come from it. Brian, I mentioned at the beginning that you're an ally. I can definitely see that. I'm so excited that you have an agency, you're coaching executives, you're influencing companies to go into the light side and avoid the dark side. It's not going to work anyways. The margins of potential by stepping into the dark side are going to become lower and lower. And my whole mission is I'm trying to teach selling with love because I'm tired of douchebag marketers and salespeople trying to take advantage of people. So when the good companies learn to sell more human to human, that's a win in my book. And so, Brian, one question I ask everybody who comes on the show is, you're on the Selling with Love podcast. What does selling with love mean to you?
First of all, it's a good title of a podcast, so I'm happy to be here. I would say that selling with love is knowing what your impact is on others. If we can each understand ourselves and like where our come from is. For instance, immediately when you got on video, I was connected to, we hadn't met before, but I was so connected to you already because you had this inviting, warm, even with a few bumps on unintentional, like a door ringing or like things happening. And yet still like, this is such a grounded place that I'm feeling like I really enjoy. So thank you. And that to me is selling with love. Like this here, this feeling that we get where we just want to talk to somebody more because it just invites you in, that's selling with love. Like if you go into a space where you feel like you want to get as fast out of the room as possible, that's the opposite of selling with love. So it's your intentional or unintentional impact that made me want to stay longer here. And I hope everybody can help create that for themselves or their companies.
See, my blue light of hypnosis has been working. And so, no, Brian, honestly, it's just been a great conversation. Like the feeling is mutual. I really appreciate you coming on the show. I'm glad that you're putting out the literature that's getting these companies to bring humanity, to bring more sharing, bring more like caring. I mean, we just want people to care more. And I think that's the recipe for a more successful business. And the biggest thing I want to take away on is, again, just seeing how imperfection, empathy, and simplicity, just three things to just keep anchored on, gives you the competitive advantage. And I think that gives permission for so many people to just, if you care, go take a chance, go and give it a shot. And I think that'll be the biggest call to action I want to give for everybody, as well as picking up a copy of the book and then going to listen to the podcast. If you're especially more into sales, this is going to be one you want to listen to where it's going to be much more applicable to the sales environment. So we'll put a link to all of that into the show notes. And Brian, it was an absolute pleasure. And thank you so much for coming on the show.
Oh, the pleasure was mine. Thank you.
I am your host, Jason Mark Campbell, and this is the Selling with Love podcast.
Hey. Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to ramp.com and love finance again.